The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back. As we head into Hour 2 this Thursday, October 10th, 2019, I am Seth Leibs, and it is a delight to welcome back to the show my good friend and great Middle East expert, one of the best, if not the best, resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, Michael Rubin, an author of several books. My favorite, Dancing with the Devil, The Perils of Engaging Rogue Regimes. Michael, welcome back to the airwaves of Phoenix.
Hey, thanks for having me, Seth.
You betcha. I heard your interview slash discussion slash debate with my colleague and our other mutual friend, Hugh Hewitt, yesterday on the Syria-Turkey-United States situation. Kurds, I guess, Kurd-Syria-Turkey-United States situation.
Right.
And, you know, I went into listening to that thinking, having mixed thoughts about what Donald Trump's policy was and what's now taking place there. And my audience has kind of been, if I'm just doing a back-of-the-envelope poll, Michael, my audience is, I would say, 60-40-ish on the president's side of this policy. But you make some very, very good and strong arguments for a counter policy or for a dissent or a disagreement, and I wanted to kind of give some air to it because I mean it makes all the sober sense in the world what you were saying, and I wanted to give that other side of the equation here. First, can we do it this way? Why is the United States there? What is the conflict between Turkey and Syria, and where are the Kurds in that? Could you give us like a 2-minute overview of just kind of the background of everything here?
Well, certainly. Basically, the reason why the United States is in that portion of Syria is twofold. First, it was with regard to the defeat of the Islamic State. Mm-hmm. Now, while we used air power to defeat the Islamic State, we relied on indigenous forces, and specifically in this case, the Kurds. So the U.S. presence there, which was relatively minuscule, basically 100 people who weren't involved in combat, had an amplifying effect with our local partners to control a huge swath of territory that was strategically important not only for the Islamic State, but also for Iranian attempts to expand with its militias and reach the Eastern Mediterranean. Now, with regard to Turkey and the Kurds are split across four countries. But the Kurds in Syria and the Kurds in Turkey are basically tribally and linguistically connected. They have a lot of the same ideology. Many of the Kurds in Turkey waged an insurgency against Turkey beginning in 1984, and the Turks accused the Kurds, who are in Syria, of being members of that insurgency. Now, there's actually no evidence that there's been any terrorist attack launched from this region of Syria into Turkey, but Turkey basically gave an ultimatum and said there's no difference between Al-Qaeda and the PKK, mm-hmm. that's what the Turks call this group, mm-hmm. and therefore we're going to go in to prevent a terror corridor. Mm-hmm. Now, the last point I think that needs to be brought up is President Trump says, and many of his supporters say, you know, Turkey's just a much more important ally and we have to be realistic about it.
Because of NATO, et cetera, right.
Exactly, and that was the reason why we didn't work with the Syrian Kurds up until late 2014. When I first went into Syrian Kurdistan, we weren't working at all. We weren't talking to the Kurds at all.
Okay.
But the reason we started working with the Kurds is we became aware of irrefutable intelligence that the Turks were materially, logistically, and financially supporting the Islamic State. Therefore, when our goal became to defeat the Islamic State, it became imperative we didn't just rely on the Turks. The Turks were being like Pakistan on the Mediterranean, and that's a reference to how Pakistan played a double game.
Yeah, that's a fairly good analogy. Okay, I can follow that. I'm with you so far. Okay.
And so basically that's where we stand. We've partnered with these guys. They've been very effective. When people say, hey, Turkey's a more important ally and we can trust Turkey to take on the Islamic State, the question then becomes, why can we trust Turkey now more than we could trust them just a couple years ago when
it's
they
like
were,
saying, if I understand that analogy right, going back to what you said, simple steps here for simple minds, it's like saying
and
we can
indeed,
trust Pakistan to help us with Al-Qaeda, right?
Right, and
okay.
What worries me most, and just very briefly,
sure.
is yesterday Turkey's interior minister got on CNN Turk and basically referred to the Islamic State as their partners and said that we will come to an agreement with the Islamic State. An agreement is different than a defeat.
Okay, now, perfectly done, Michael. Thank you. That's very understandable. Now, let me do a little devil's advocate and a little devil's opposition with you, if I can. One of the things going into this that was surprising to me, and I haven't done enough reading on it in a long time, but the last reading I had done is, yes, I get Turkey's part of NATO. We have been told for years now, as I have witnessed for years, Erdogan becoming increasingly Islamist and moving himself away from alliance with the United States. No?
Well, that's absolutely the case. And this is why there's such a bipartisan reaction in Congress. And nowadays, against the backdrop of the impeachment fight and everything else, it's hard to find bipartisanship on anything.
Sure.
And yet our alliance and our willingness to work with the Kurds is bringing out that bipartisanship.
Now, devil's advocate, you said 100 U.S. troops, which is the number we keep hearing about, and you say it's a multiplier force. But a lot of people will say, help me understand that, Michael. How could 100 troops keep Turkey from incurring into Syria?
Well, 100 troops can't keep Turkey from incurring into Syria, but they can keep the Islamic State at bay, especially when we partner with indigenous forces. Now, the reason we work with local forces is it prevents the need for mass deployments.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not talking about hundreds of thousands of troops like we had in Iraq or in Afghanistan. We're talking about 100 people who are working in with the Kurds and had achieved in northeastern Syria, stability, security, and so forth. Now, people can say Turkey was going to come in. Erdogan said Turkey was going to go in. But you also got to understand Erdogan. Number one, he's full of bluster. And in the past, when he has made threats and people have pushed back on him, he has backed down. Conversely, when he has made threats and people have basically acquiesced to those threats, then he simply makes more threats.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not clear that President Trump is going to be buying any peace or stability while working with the Kurds. And to be honest, President Trump seems to be grasping at straws when he says, well, I mean, hey, look, the Kurds didn't support us at Normandy.
Oh, that's a stupid argument. I'm not even going to try and defend that.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fine.
How many people didn't support us in World War II that we're allies with? I mean, that's just ridiculous.
And I
think you probably agree with me on that, because I generally do support Donald Trump. I have my dissents and disagreements, and I disagree with him on that statement itself. The other thing that he said that kind of bothered me, I'll tell you, and it didn't make sense. It just rang in my ears a little oddly, was when he said if Turkey does go into Syria or does try to annihilate the Kurds, he will, whatever the adjective or verb was, rather, he will smash them economically. And I thought that was just a weird thing. That just didn't sound right. That didn't sound quite proportional. Why not militarily?
Well, the analogy here, well, militarily, the answer is because no one wants to get in a war with Turkey, which
Fair enough.
The second most.
Fair enough.
But I
don't think I can remember a U.S. president saying, "If here's my red line, if they go violent, we'll go economic." That just sounded odd to me. Maybe
well,
I'm wrong. You're the historian.
I mean, the analogy I would make is if you have an arsonist and you tell him, okay, if you burn down this building, I'm going to put you in double secret probation.
Right.
For the people living in the building, it doesn't really help.
Okay. Now, the biggie that I haven't gotten to yet. Can you stay a second segment, by the way?
Of course.
Okay, because this might take it. The biggie is, okay, Donald Trump did campaign on drawing troops down and from abroad. He did campaign on stopping endless wars. And maybe it's time, really, for the U.S. to start rethinking why it's our business to even be in Syria, quite frankly, at all. And this is him just, you know, going forward with his campaign promise, because it doesn't make sense to a lot of Americans why we have to have soldiers in Syria.
Okay. My response to this is there is a difference between continuing endless wars,
sure,
and overextension of American forces,
okay,
and strategic positioning of American forces to prevent the need for far more forces in an event of conflict.
Okay.
I mean, you have an analogy, for example, how when President Barack Obama ordered the unilateral withdrawal of forces in Iraq, and there weren't a huge number of forces in Iraq at the time, and they weren't in the cities.
I remember well.
They weren't sustaining daily or weekly casualties at the time and so forth.
Michael, I'm sorry. Can I ask you to bear with me? This is such a big point. We got to give it its full airing, if you don't mind, and we are hitting that hard break. I will be right back with Michael Rubin from the American Enterprise Institute, resident scholar there. My gosh, so many great writings. Kurdistan Rising, Dancing with the Devil, The Perils of Engaging Rogue Regimes, Eternal Iran, Continuity and Chaos. You can follow him on Twitter as well, at mrubin1971. Agree or disagree with him, and you always learn from him, as I do. I'm Seth Leibson. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. I am Seth, and we are delighted to have with us Michael Rubin, resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, walking us through the debates over Turkey, the United States, Kurds, and Syria. And Michael, right before the break, and if you want to restart, that's perfectly fine. I was asking you how you deal with or how you answer the argument that comes forward that, you know, Donald Trump campaigned on ending endless commitments abroad, for endless wars, and it seems like it's hard to explain generally why we have U.S. troops in Syria right now, as it was kind of hard to understand why we keep going into areas of the Middle East that seem to have fights not the United States' business, and take it any way you want.
Well, I mean, Seth, it basically comes down to the question about whether ending endless wars and ending deployments are the same thing.
Okay.
And whether there's a difference between complete isolationism versus a recognition that the United States has overreached with its forces and we need to be very much wiser about how we deploy them. The reason why people are so upset with the withdrawal from Syria is because many people assess that with 100 troops, amplifying the presence of the indigenous forces, that we were able to achieve a mission. And that if we don't have those 100 troops there, the likelihood that we are going to have a major conflict down the road becomes all the greater. And so many people, even those who support this notion of ending endless wars, in Congress, for example, will question about whether in this particular case it's wise, because northeastern Syria is different than what's going on in Afghanistan where there's active combat, than what's going on in the Philippines or perhaps other places where, frankly, we shouldn't be.
Okay, fair enough. And, Michael, I will tell you, while I am sympathetic to so many of these notions that the president spoke, and I've changed my mind a little bit on where I've been on other places with regard to deployments in the Middle East, it did seem to me like if he was going to start with Syria or, you know, the area between Turkey and Syria that where we are working with the Kurds, it seemed to me that, you know, there are much bigger deployments that people have a lot or should have a lot more questions about. I mean, at this point, I have a lot of questions about what we're doing in Afghanistan. And quite frankly, that seems to me the one that at this point so many of us are exhausted with. And I know you've been there as well and have done a lot of work
there. And I'll be going next week.
There you go. So talk to me about what that's about, if you will, a little
bit. Well, if you want to make an analogy between Syria and Afghanistan, the analogy I would be is one. The analogy I would make is that one of the problems we faced in Afghanistan is diplomatically trusting Pakistan too much. And, of course, Pakistan had sheltered Osama bin Laden, whom, under President Obama, a SEAL team killed inside Pakistan. The reason this analogy holds with Syria is trusting Pakistan in Afghanistan is like trusting Turkey inside Syria.
Yeah, I can work with that analogy. I like it.
But,
yeah.
But beyond that, one of the basic problems we have diplomatically, and it's not just on this issue, is there is no international definition of terrorism.
Okay.
And therefore, the Turks can say, we're going to help you fight terrorism, but the problem is Turkey doesn't see al-Qaeda affiliates inside Syria as terrorists. They see them as allies.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people, again, military professionals, intelligence professionals, people from both parties, will look at what Turkey is doing, look at the Free Syrian Army, the radicals which Turkey is putting in, and see, in some cases, they've identified former Islamic State fighters who simply are now operating under the Turkish flag.
Speaking of foreign Islamic State fighters or Islamic State imprisoned fighters, is this not a huge concern with what we've done with the Kurds right now?
Oh, this is absolutely a huge concern. The camp, which many of these foreign fighters or their family members, their kids and so forth, were detained at, is a place called Al-Hol,
okay.
H-O-L, which is not too far from Deir ez-Zor. Now, on one hand, the Turks have said, we're not going to go this far down. But on the other hand, realistically, the Kurds who have been guarding this camp have to leave the camp because they're fighting for what they see as their towns, their villages, and so forth, against the Turkish army. But on top of that, some of the most high-value Islamic State prisoners were held at a prison in Qamishli, a town that came under attack yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And bizarrely, the Turks took out the guard post
mm-hmm.
of that prison,
mm-hmm.
which is leaving a lot of people scratching their heads and questioning what the Turks are really after.
Michael, what would you, assuming, not to put words in your mouth, assuming you think Donald Trump, is it fair to say you think Donald Trump blundered this one?
Donald Trump blundered this
one.
Yeah.
So assuming that and assuming he turned to you for your advice on what to do to overcome it, reverse it, change it, alter it, what would you advise? What's the best thing he could do, whether it's status quo or something beyond, or status quo ante or something better than status quo ante? What would you suggest?
I would say it's status quo ante at this point.
Okay.
He can turn to the Turks, say you're not achieving what you promised to achieve. This has to end. And frankly, the Turks, for all Erdogan's bluster, are still afraid of the United States. When people say, hey, Turkey might then go into Russia's hands, well, Russia doesn't want the Islamic State running free either. And the fact of the matter is, if we can't count on Turkey as a NATO ally if every time they're upset, they threaten to go into Russia's arms.
Okay. Michael Rubin. Thank you very much. Again, folks, you can follow Michael Rubin on Twitter. It's at, what did I get it right at the first time? At MRubin71?
At MRubin1971.
Sorry, at MRubin1971. And, of course, you can get and follow his work at the American Enterprise Institute, AEI.org. Michael, always a delight having you. Always a delight talking to you. Always a delight learning from you, sir.
Hey, thanks a lot, Seth.
All right, we'll be in touch soon. Thank you very much. Seth Leibson Show, 602-508-0960. I see Rob is calling, I think, probably with a dissent from Michael. That's fine. We'll take that in. Actually, you know what? Let's go to it right now. I think we have a moment to get in there right before the break. Hi, Rob. How are you?
Oh, hi, Seth. Actually, I had a couple of points. I'm not so much dissenting from Michael Rubin's comments. In fact, I'm almost completely in agreement.
Okay.
But the first thing I wanted to talk about since I'm retired was John Dabrowski. What do people do in retirement?
Okay.
And, you know, if they're ex-Navy fighter pilots and their wives, you know, we smoke, we drink, we hit the pool, we get into bar fights, we listen to Seth Leibson, of course, every day, faithfully. We watch the Murder Channel or ID Discovery. We sleep, we travel a little bit, we visit kids, grandkids, restaurants. But what worries me, that's my humorous part,
sure,
is that having, you know, my mother in particular, going into retirement is seeing my mom go into a nursing home and somehow, I guess through Medicaid or something, they suck all the life savings out of people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's taken away until they become basically a ward of the state. And I find that completely unacceptable.
Mm.
Okay, so that's one issue, and I know you got some sound going on, so we can talk about the turkey stuff after the...
You want to do a little turkey on the other side? That'd be fine, Rob. Okay,
yeah.
We'll be right back. I'm Seth Leibson, 602-508-0960. Is there no one in the audience who owns goldfish and that can tell me it's okay to have two male goldfish together in a goldfish bowl? I just never thought that would be a problem. 602-580-960. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Trump is driving them nuts in Minneapolis. He is he's going to be speaking in Minneapolis tonight, later tonight, and I take a little delight in that it's in the same congressional district that Ilhan Omar represents. Can't wait to see what he says about her, because I do hope that the media does start looking into her. This is the value. Someone asked me the other day, I spoke a little bit about this, what's the value of the case they were raising? What's the value in a Republican bringing a resolution in the House of Representatives that has no chance of passing? Getting media attention on it, getting media attention on the underlying story and what the resolution is about, getting the media to cover it. When Trump talks about something, the media tends to cover it. Now, they may lie about it, they may fact check in the opposite direction, but at least it gets their attention on it. And I think the media, at one point or another here, is ultimately going to have to be shamed into their lack of coverage and attention to what Ilhan Omar has been up to in Minneapolis. Powerline blog and one other journalist have been all over it and have basically done their work for them. They've outlined everything. They've cited everything. Just it's not getting any attention. And you know darn well, if it were some Republican congressman, we would be getting unrelenting, unremitting attention. Rob, anyway, sorry about the patience I asked of you. Go right ahead, sir.
Well, no, thank you. I agree, and I think that there's obviously a little bit of bias on the media side.
Just a little.
Yeah, imagine that. A couple of things, and I may not have ever told you this. I was working foreign military sales with the Army for a defense company in the Washington, D.C. area about 5 years ago. One of the things I was responsible for was the potential sale of the Patriot missile system mm-hmm. in Turkey mm-hmm. because they wanted to try to protect their borders. Mm-hmm. Now, I left before anything was worked out, but I was dealing with the Pentagon and the State Department and a bunch of other bureaucratic agencies within the DOD. I wanted to bring a couple of points up is that the Turkish military is very pro-United States. And I don't think a lot of people really understand
that's
that.
A good fact.
But, like our United States, the Erdogan government, well, they're not so much.
Yeah, right. No, that's a good dichotomy that we should keep in mind. Good to know.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know that, again, the media really covers that kind of stuff.
It's
and
very hard for the media to apprehend, two thoughts at once that might be somewhat contradictory. But that is, in fairness, and not a defense of the media, but in fairness maybe to this audience and to me a little bit, is, mm-hmm. The Middle East is awfully hard. It's not the Middle West. It's not easy to understand, right?
Yeah, exactly. And again, when we talk about the Middle East, and in particular Turkey, what we're seeing, I think, is that Turkey is leading the Sunni jihadists. Iran is leading the Shiite jihadists, and they're sort of priming for a war against each other. Now, what's interesting about that, when you think about it, is, in our own country, why don't, and this is all, the elites that, are against us pulling out of Turkey and everything. Why don't they care as much about our own lawless borders as they do?
Oh, that's a great point.
The Turkish Syria border.
Rob, that is a hugely important point. I'm glad you said
it. I think so. Yeah. I think so, too. I mean, you've got cartels, you've got human trafficking,
you bet.
You've got drug running, gun running.
You bet.
You've got,
if you could put half as much, a quarter as much, 10% as much attention on our own borders that get overrun by incursions of evil, as you do seem other countries that, are hardly ringing with the sentiment in the U.S. breast. It would be a better world. Absolutely.
Oh,
great point.
You bet.
Great
now,
point.
Do you read Pamela Geller by any chance?
On occasion. And I say on occasion because I'm overwhelmed with what to read. So she's in the category of not daily, but once in a while.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, unlike you, I'm retired, so I can read that probably because you have a day job. Anyway,
it's an old joke. Old joke. Yeah. I have to, but you?
I know.
Yeah.
Anyway, she had a great article that was written by a Dr. Andrew Boss, and it was
I know Andrew.
Yeah, Stop Romanticizing the Kurds.
Okay.
And what it had to do with was, you know, the Kurdish Marxist Brigade are operating within northern Syria. They have the ties to the PKK, which, of course, Turkey looks at as terrorism.
Of course, yes. This is part of the problem as well. But I will get that article. I like Andrew Boston.
Oh, yeah.
I like him a lot.
And I think, you know, and again, I think that's what Americans need to understand is that there's different factions.
Nicely put. I got to hit the break here, Rob. I appreciate it, though. What a great tip. Thank you, sir. 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. If you're feeling run down and don't have the energy that you used to, it's probably because you're not eating enough fruits and vegetables. It's time to try Balance of Nature's fruits and vegetables in capsule form. Balance of Nature is not like ordinary vitamins that are made with synthetics. It's just natural food in a vegetarian capsule with tens of thousands of vital nutrients from 100% fruits, vegetables, and whole food plants. A daily dose of Balance of Nature capsules has 10 servings of 31 different fruits and vegetables. Once you start taking Balance of Nature, you'll feel great. People report that their skin looks better and they have a lot more energy. It's time to improve the quality of your life. Experience the Balance of Nature difference for yourself. From now until Columbus Day, Balance of Nature is offering $25 off and free shipping on your first preferred order of Balance of Nature. This special is good between now and Columbus Day, so don't wait. Call 800-246-8751 or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code BALANCE. I have a few visitors in the studio that I'm going to go to in just a moment. If you'll just, I'll ask you your patience just for a second because I think it might be on a topic you might know something about. First, Todd in Phoenix. Welcome to the show, Todd.
Hey, Seth.
How are
you? I don't know if you were kidding. I just kind of caught a little bit at the end. You're talking about goldfish?
Yeah, I wasn't kidding. I brought some goldfish into the office because I thought it was a nice thing to do, and everyone just went crazy on me saying, you can't have two males. They're not really goldfish. It used to be just a simple thing. You come home with a plastic bag of two goldfish, put them in a bowl, and you're done. What did I do wrong?
You did nothing. These people are idiots.
Can you have two male goldfish?
Yeah, you can have two male, two female.
That's
two.
What I thought.
It doesn't matter.
I know. It's a society.
As long as they have enough room for both of them.
Perfect.
You know, as long as the bowl is big enough for both of them.
I think it is. They're fine. They're fine. Okay, thank you. You've put
And they like to nibble on, like, you can get the live plant.
Well, we have a plant in there, and we have some fish food. We have plants and fish.
Goldfish are bottom feeders.
Okay, well, we'll add as we go along here. As they live and thrive, we will add.
They don't care about sex.
Okay. Thank you, Todd.
That's a good one.
I appreciate it very much. Now let me turn to my guests in studio. This is really, really cute. These are two sisters and their brother are visiting the studio from a friend of mine. Tell me your name. Say it right in the microphone so everyone gets to know who you are.
My name is Carson.
And how old are you, Carson?
6.
Wonderful. And your name and age?
I'm Kenzie, and I am 10 years old.
10 years old.
I'm Kaylin, and I'm 14 years old.
And are you on fall break? Is that why you're not at school right now?
Yeah.
Yes.
And where are you going? Why are you here?
Because we're going to go to a Coyotes hockey game.
You're going to go to a hockey game. Carson, have you gone to a hockey game before?
Yeah.
Are you so excited?
Yeah.
Have any of you had goldfish before?
Yes.
Yeah. And it's easy, right? It's fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
People should not be making, like, a big deal out of it. It's the simplest thing in the world, right?
Yes.
Do you have other pets?
Yeah. Two dogs and two cats.
Yeah.
Great. And everyone gets along.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Have fun at the Coyotes game. And now
you can
say you've been on radio and all that.
I will.
So next time you go to a radio station, someone says, have you been on radio? Like they asked you if you've been to a hockey game, you can answer in the affirmative.
We can say yes.
And we are all enriched and ennobled. Have a fun time. It was lovely meeting you.
Thanks for stopping by.
I hope you like doing it. Great. Thank you very much. Doug in Maricopa. How are you, Doug?
I'm doing great. You know, that might have been my favorite interview today.
Yeah, it was. It was pretty easy.
Yeah, it was. I'm a little worried though because I'm afraid that that the interview with the 6-year-old might have been far more insightful than any with me.
I don't know about that. You know, there's a complicated moral point to what you're saying though. And I don't want us as a society, as cute and fun as it is, obviously, to have kids around you, and it's great, and it keeps you young. And I like to, you know, I've always liked to have younger people working around me, and I've always liked to mentor. I learned this from great jazz musicians, by the way. As they age, mm-hmm. you notice yeah. they keep up these tremendous tour schedules and tremendous amounts of energy by what? By surrounding themselves with younger musicians.
Yes.
And it's there's a really good lesson there. But. Don't surrender the moral or intellectual authority to people that can't teach you anything either, which is an important point. I do worry about that. No, I really do worry about that when I look at, say, these rallies that we're going to see tonight later in Minnesota, for example, where, you know, the media thinks it's important to interview some 17-year-old dunderhead for his insight on what's wrong with the Trump presidency and why we listen to, I don't know, 16-year-olds who tell us that entire ecosystems are dissolving before our very eyes. I don't want us to go down that road.
Well, absolutely. I think when we have a generation or two that basically has, I think I was reading some stats, and I might be off a few percentage points, but the concept is still there, where you had like 18% of these people that are like seniors getting their bachelor's degree can't tell you the participants of the Civil War.
Right, right.
I mean, that kind of stuff, the ignorance. Now, that is a major event. Now, I'm not talking about subtle nuances. We're not talking about Frederick Bastiat here. Mm-hmm. We are talking about that one simple major event, and that's the ignorance level. And so I don't care if we get into simple physics or we get into biology. And I'm a simple artist. I'm just nothing but a pigment pusher here, a professional one for sure. But whenever I get talking to young people, the breath, they always wonder what I majored in, because people of my generation have some basic knowledge level that exceeds their level of basic knowledge tremendously. And if you go back even, I'll tell you, there's something really fun. I've read a few diaries from farm boys in Ohio in the Civil War. One of them, Corporal Cy Clegg in his part, a really good rendition of what actually happened as far as a common soldier in the Civil War. The level of writing eloquence and actually
pictorial
drawing,
yeah.
It was breathtaking.
Yeah.
Breathtaking of their basic knowledge is far broader than people. We tend to think we're such a smart generation. But I can tell you we aren't in terms of basic knowledge. I read a book by Thomas Sowell, and about education, and I consider him one of our national treasures.
Mm-hmm.
He was saying that a high school graduate, a C-level high school graduate of 1948, had more basic knowledge than a bachelor's of science does today.
Do that again. That's important. Do that again.
He said that in the book that basically a C student, an average student in graduating high school in 1948, had more basic broad knowledge than a bachelor's of science degree graduate.
I have no doubt about that. I have no doubt about that. And the reason I have no doubt about that is I don't know if this was true of you or not, but I learned a ton of history from my dad. Who was nothing but a science major his whole life. You know, that's all he did was science. And I learned a ton of American history from him. I have no doubt about it. None.
Yeah. And my dad, too, reading history. But I had some advice on retirement, of which I'm
going to try to avoid. You want to hold a second and then give me advice on retirement? I'd love that.
Sure.
This is great.
Okay.
All right. Not that I'm necessarily going anywhere too quickly, at least not by my choice. Memo to Jim Ryan. I'm Seth Leibson, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. It's kind of retirement music a little bit. It was music in college, and I have a feeling when I'm retired, I'm going back to it. Doug in Maricopa, how are you, brother?
I'm doing just
fine.
You wanted to say something about the retirement discussion John Dombrowski kicked off.
Yes, I did. Okay. I did. I was so conflicted because I also wanted to talk about, I'd rather pull back a little bit from some of these wars because I had a new war in mind. I'd like to go on a different type of a war, but that's for another time, perhaps. The idea of retirement, my father died 2 months shy of 100, and he gave me quite a bit of advice about retirement and living an old age. Okay. And I have also received that from a 94-year-old friend and art student of ours, and also many friends that I have that are retired. And basically it is, he said that he learned a lesson when he began to, as he aged, that he saw a number of his friends die 15 years before they were put in the ground.
Hmm.
And what he meant by that is they lost their passion for living. They lost their reason. And it didn't always have to do with finances as much as it had to do with the finding something that gives you passion.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what it is. It can be ditch digging. It can be politics. It can be general knowledge. It can be your grandkids painting. It can be sculpting. It can be just general knowledge. It can be, radio talk show host. It can be anything. But have a passion that gives you a reason to live, gives you joy, gives you dynamism. We tried to force him to retire and basically at 80, and he started up another business and earned a six-digit income because he just said, look, if you define retirement as doing what I want, when I want, I've been retired.
I've been retired for decades, yeah. I love that. I worry about people retiring at ages they think they have to when they still got a lot of gas in the tank. And I worry about people with gas in the tank who are forced to retire. I've seen this in some major law firms where you have some of these excellent attorneys who have spent years accumulating knowledge and understandings of things, and they're forced to retire. I think that's just a total disservice. Other law firms are happy to sup them up. And I see too many people retire and then lose because they don't have other passions, kind of live lives that you just kind of wish they went back to their old ones without putting too strong.
We need to challenge.
We need
to challenge ourselves mentally and physically throughout our lives.
Some of the greatest teachers I had were people who were volunteer working in retirement. That's one of the things I loved about working at Empower America. So I worked for Gene Kirkpatrick, Jack Kemp, and Bill Bennett, who were all retired from government service. None of them took a salary there. They did this all volunteer. They were there every day. It was their office. And just what a great model. They didn't cash into the K Street lobby work either. It was just they were dedicated to the public policy they loved. Boy, that was a real experience and a real joy, and it should be a real compliment towards them that I don't think they get enough credit for. Very unique in D.C. I'm Seth, 602-5080-960. We'll be right back.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.